Well, a birth parent has rights. There comes a time when those rights are superseded with the concern when circumstances and actions endanger a child who is then placed in foster care. This doesn't eliminate the opportunity for that parent to repair what they've broken, demonstrate redemption, and seek to have their child returned to them. However, courts and the cost of seeking that resolution has wound up keeping families apart. My first guest today is here with her analysis of a recent New Jersey State Supreme Court ruling regarding this situation. She's an attorney with the New Jersey chapter of the ACLU, Rebecca Livengren. Thanks for being with us today, Rebecca.
Thanks so much for having me.
And it's ACLU-NJ.org. Learn more about this case, various issues at the ACLU in New Jersey and elsewhere. Pay attention, put the focus on. So give us the background of this case. It involved a woman who fell on financially hard times and thought it best to surrender her special needs child to what she thought was foster care.
So, right. She went to a private adoption agency, and pursuant to statute, the adoption agency gave her counseling about the permanency of the loss of adoption, and she decided not to pursue adoption, and instead the agency told her that they could foster the child. So she agreed to that. They put in place a parenting plan, and after about a year, the agency initiated adoption proceedings.
Is there, for the adoption agency, are there rules, regulations they have to follow as far as notifications? Did they follow them?
They did follow the rules that were in place at the time in terms of notifying her that they were proceeding with an adoption action. However, what this decision has recognized is that as a parent, she has a right to counsel in these cases. That right had not been clearly recognized before the recent decision. And so the notice that the agency provided her was very unclear about that right. It said she might have a right to counsel, and the organizations to which it referred her do not typically represent parents in these cases. And they referred her to organizations whose names they got wrong. And so it would have been very difficult for her to seek counsel on the basis of the representations the adoption agency made. She indeed did not seek counsel or did not retain counsel. She represented herself during the trial. And adoption cases frequently involve expert witnesses in cases involving arguments about bonding where the division the Division of Youth and Services, it's now DCPP, where the division is involved, those cases are required to have expert testimony. And she, as a layperson, was confronted with expert witnesses who she really was not in a position to adequately cross-examine. And so she proceeded on her own at trial. The court granted the adoption and terminated her parental rights. And then on appeal, the appellate division raised this question of right to counsel.
That was my first question when I first heard the story. The judge in the initial trial didn't see something wrong with this picture, that here was a mom standing alone with that representation?
That's right. The judge did not appoint counsel. There was some cursory discussion about it, and then the judge proceeded with the trial without with the mom unrepresented.
And we should say, too, I want to point this out, there's a law firm in Morristown, Donahue, Hagen, Klein, and Weisberg, who later, as the case went to the state Supreme Court, did pro bono begin to represent, as she's known in the lawsuit, the mother, L.A. So,
mm-hmm. And at the appellate division as well, I believe they
are. I want to give credit to, there are some actual good attorneys out there.
There are lots of good attorneys out there.
And they do it willingly, not as some part of a mandate or anything in their pro bono work. This law firm happened to hear the story and they gave a damn. So, you know, bravo to them. The, for the adoption service to make the decision they did, are there steps they have to take to make that decision, or is it by just their will and their whim?
When they decided to move for adoption, there are showings that they would have to make before the court. They would have to meet a number of statutory showings about the degree to which L.A., in this case, had assumed the role of being a parent. It's different, and I think one thing that's an important way of understanding this case is when DCPP is initiating a termination, when the state is initiating a termination, as you intuit, there are showings, there is a process they have to go through. And the parents in that process are afforded counsel from the beginning. So had LA gone to, had LA had her child removed by DCPP, which again, there's no reason to think that DCPP would have intervened. There's no evidence of unfitness in the record with respect to LA. But in cases where the state does intervene and take, you know, and assumes custody of children, they have to immediately provide counsel for the parents, and then they have to make reunification efforts. DCPP has to provide services to the parents to try to remedy whatever the difficulty is and to try to reunite parents and children. And so those, the adoption agency is not bound by those same set of laws. And now, it, as was not clear before, the adoption agency can move for termination without making those showings that the state would have to make. But when it does so, the parent is entitled to counsel if she can't afford counsel.
We're talking with Rebecca Livingood from the New Jersey chapter of the ACLU about a case involving parental rights adoption in New Jersey. And you learn more at aclu-nj.org. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. And there's a double-edged consequence to this whole thing, too, because the special needs daughter is, has now been separated from her birth mother, and by all, at least by the testimony of the experts for the family who wanted to adopt her formally and officially, there's a bond now with that family and an older sister, quote-unquote sister in this case. So for this to be reversed, and although one would hope that, you know, everything could be repaired with the birth family, there's going to be an impact on this little girl.
So the Supreme Court's decision does not speak to the outcome of custody for the child in this case. What the Supreme Court did was it remanded, it vacated the termination and remanded the case to the family court for a retrial. And at this trial, the mother will be represented. Bonding that has occurred between the child and the foster parents will certainly be taken into account by the court during that retrial. But I think that it is, the provision of counsel is not a double-edged sword. It really is all to the good. By having counsel, LA will be able to make a presentation more effectively for the court. It will give the court better information for making its decision, and it will ensure that that decision is based on real information in the record rather than this sort of lopsided presentation that happens when only one party has a lawyer.
I certainly agree with that, too. I was referring to how the mistake by the initial court is creating the double consequence here, plus the fact, too, that LA was not allowed any parental visits.
So there is a complicated history of visitation between LA and the child, but yes, we certainly agree that the delay that takes place, and in this case, as you point out, there was a delay of several years while this case was litigated, and that is not in anybody's interest.
Do you think, do we know how frequent instances like this have been happening in New Jersey? Is this a rare instance?
We don't. It does seem that private contested adoptions where an agency is seeking termination are relatively unusual. We don't have the exact numbers, and that was something that the Supreme Court struggled with a bit, was trying to understand the scope of the problem. But there's a reason that it was being litigated for the first time now. It hasn't come up too frequently.
If you look as a summary, was this just a case, again, by the initial court? They were just looking at the money of the matter. They saw a wealthy family. They saw a mother, albeit that she was making, you know, writing her financial ship. And that was really their priority of how they weighed that initial decision?
Well, it's a good concern to raise. The court in New Jersey, the Supreme Court, has been clear and extremely consistent that the best interest of the child standard, which is the standard the court applies, does not mean that the child goes to the wealthier family. The court has said over and over that this is not a decision between a family with a library full of the classics and a family that watches TV more frequently. That the best interest standard is really meant to look initially at whether the birth parents can provide parenting to the child. And so it isn't the kind of wealth comparison that you're describing. The danger, that standard, though, is a tricky one to apply. And the danger is that when only one parent is represented by a lawyer, the court doesn't have all the information it needs to apply that standard. And there is a real risk that without representation by a parent in worse financial circumstances, that the court, even unconsciously, will tend to favor a wealthier family.
Well, as mentioned earlier, L.A., as the case with L.A. and her special needs daughter is not complete, but at least in the second time at bat, she is going to have a fair opportunity, L.A. is, to present her case and for a judge, hopefully with a lot more clearer vision of the full picture, to make a more just and beneficial decision for primarily the daughter, who, as we said, too, with the bonding and all that instance, you know, experts are better to testify on that than a layperson, but keeping a family together and helping a child understand their roots and their heritage is certainly part of the priority picture as well. Learn more about this case and the work of the New Jersey chapter of the ACLU. Their website is aclu-nj.org. And we're joined by one of their attorneys, Rebecca Livengood. Rebecca, thanks for filling us in on this sad but hopefully a happy ending to B story. Thanks for being here today.
Great to talk to you. Thanks so much for having me.